Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Gambling on Development: Why Some Countries Win and Others Lose is a development economics book by Stefan Durkan that explains why some low and middle income countries manage sustained growth and poverty reduction while others remain stuck, rather than presenting a single policy formula. The book argues that development depends on a political settlement in which national elites decide to back a growth-oriented future instead of defending short-term advantages. Durkan draws on his long career as an economist and policy advisor across many countries to compare cases where progress took off, such as China, Bangladesh, Ghana, Indonesia, and Ethiopia, with places where state power and elite interests blocked transformation. The book is aimed at readers who want to understand development as a political process, not just an economic one. It is especially concerned with what governments, donors, and development practitioners can realistically do when institutions are weak and outcomes depend on local bargaining, stability, and a willingness to learn from mistakes. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the book's core idea: development depends on an elite bargain, not a universal policy recipe. Durkan's central claim is that economic transformation rarely comes from copying a fixed set of policies. Instead, countries advance when influential elites reach a bargain that makes broad-based growth preferable to preserving narrow privilege. This is the meaning of the development bargain in the book. Those with political and economic power accept that their long-term interests are better served by investing in growth, state capacity, and wider opportunity. The book uses this idea to challenge standard development thinking that searches for one best model. Durkan argues that the same policy can succeed in one setting and fail in another because the underlying political incentives differ. This makes the book less about technical reforms in isolation and more about the conditions under which leaders choose to commit to development. The emphasis on elite behavior gives the book its distinctive angle, since it treats development as a collective wager rather than a purely administrative task. Secondly, why stability and peace are preconditions for lasting growth. A major theme in the book is that development bargains only work when they create enough peace and stability for investment planning and institution building to occur. Durkan does not present growth as impossible in all difficult environments, but he argues that countries need a political order stable enough to prevent constant reversal, violence, or elite fragmentation. If powerful groups fear immediate loss of power or security, they are unlikely to support policies that depend on long-time horizons. The book therefore treats stability not as a secondary benefit of growth, but as one of the mechanisms that makes growth possible in the first place. This helps explain why some states remain trapped in low trust, low investment equilibria, while others gradually build confidence in the future. The point is practical, as well as analytical development agencies often focus on projects and sectors. But Durkan shows that without a basic bargain holding the political system together, those efforts can remain fragile or temporary. Thirdly, state capacity matters, but only when it is matched to realistic ambitions. Durkan gives special attention to what states can actually do, not simply what they claim to want to do. One of the book's more important insights is that a developmental state must be ambitious yet realistic about its own capacity. Governments that overreach can undermine credibility, while states that understand their limits can focus on a manageable set of priorities and build competence over time. The book suggests that successful development is often marked by gradual improvements in how the state performs, learns, and coordinates action rather than by dramatic, all-at-once reform. This matters because many poor countries face states that are either too weak, too politicized, or too dependent on rents to act consistently. Durkan's analysis implies that development is not just about having good intentions. It is about creating institutions that can deliver enough reliability for firms, farmers, and households to plan ahead. That makes credibility, adaptability, and state discipline central to the book's argument. Fourthly, learning from failure is part of the development process. Another recurring idea is that successful development bargains are not static arrangements. They require a willingness to correct mistakes and adjust strategy when policies fail. Durkan presents learning as a political as well as a technical activity, because elites and officials must be prepared to admit that some choices do not work and that course correction is necessary. This is important in a book that rejects universal blueprints. If there is no single model to copy, then development must involve experimentation, feedback, and incremental revision. The book therefore values pragmatism over ideological consistency. It treats successful countries as places where leaders did not merely announce a vision, but also adapted when faced with new evidence, changing conditions, or implementation failures. This helps explain why some countries sustain momentum even when early reforms are imperfect. The argument is also a warning to outsiders' aid programs that assume fixed solutions may miss the real work of building local capacity to learn, revise, and keep moving. Lastly, a skeptical view of aid outsiders can support, but not substitute for local political commitment. Durkan is cautious about the idea that external actors can engineer development from outside. He argues that aid is most effective when it follows local leadership and respects the political realities of the country concerned. This does not mean aid is useless, but it does mean that donors should be modest about what they can accomplish without a domestic bargain in favor of growth. The book, therefore, pushes back against technocratic or top-down assistance models that assume outsiders can simply transplant institutions or policy packages. It also explains why some aid efforts disappoint. They may address symptoms while ignoring the political incentives that sustain poverty. Durkan's position is significant because it reframes aid as a supporting role rather than a leading one. For policymakers and practitioners, the implication is that the first question should not be which intervention is best in abstract terms, but whether the domestic environment contains the political commitment needed to make any intervention durable. In conclusion, Gambling on Development is best suited to readers who want a serious explanation of why development succeeds in some places and stalls in others. Policymakers, development professionals, economists, students of political economy, and readers interested in Africa and Asia will all find it useful, especially if they want to move beyond simple debates about aid, governance, or best practice. Its practical value lies in forcing readers to think about incentives, elite coalitions, state credibility, and the limits of outside intervention. Its intellectual value lies in the way it connects economics to politics without reducing development to either one alone. Compared with many books in the genre, it stands out for its restrained and realistic tone. Durkan does not offer a miracle formula or a moralized success story. Instead, he argues that development is a risky political gamble that only works when powerful actors choose growth over short-term protection. That makes the book especially relevant for readers looking for a grounded, non-ideological account of development. If you would like to support Stefan Durkan, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.